Today is Saturday, April 23rd, and I'm here with Russell Elmer for my second appointment. And today, Russell is going to start by giving me some history of the local school.
The country school, I'm going to start the little cove and come around the foothill area. The first school, the little cove, a couple miles north, was they called Shanghai. The story goes that when they were building the schoolhouse, a fellow come along who was a carpenter. He'd been in the Orient building, and they hired him on to help build the school. Well, when it got fairly well constructed, he spent a little time cutting out a rooster, wooden rooster, and he called Shanghai Rooster. And evidently, from the Orient, this rooster. So the story is that that's how they named the school. The next one down the road, around the foothill, probably about 3 miles, was Frosty School. And I had some cousins that went to Frosty School. The story is that how the Frosty School was named was Dr. Koger. He lived along there, and I think he donated land for the school. But anyway, he had a roan cow he called Frosty. And the story is that they named the school after the roan cow. So come on around the foothill another 3 miles. And that school was Hardscrabble.
Hardscrabble?
Hardscrabble. Times were tough. And it was a community effort to build that school. My mother went to a great school there. But getting back to Frosty, we used to go to the, I had some cousins that attended there, and we'd go to the Christmas program. And there was an old maid from the South, Miss Roberts, was teaching there. And every Christmas program, they had a curtain and a little stage, but the heating stove was out in the corner of the room. And she always had to have Negroes in the plays. So she'd come out with her little rag and she'd open the stove and get blacking on, and she'd black up those kids to make Negroes. Oh. Always had Negroes in the Christmas programs. So when Hardscrabble School was discontinued, they built the Lower Cove School where I went to school. And I rode across the field 3 miles, and there was usually two or three gates to open getting through the fields. And my father fixed the latches on those gates so that I could ride up and then latch the gate and ride through, turn my horse around and shut the gate and latch it without getting off. So in about 39, I think it was 39, these little schools were all discontinued, and the district was combined with Cole, and they started the school bus. Well, then on around a couple miles farther was, I don't know what the original name of that school was, but they called it come back to it. I'll think of it. The next one over was Riverside. That was on Carter Lane, between Carter Lane and Woodruff Lane. And that school was moved up to Cove, and it was remodeled for a dwelling. It's still being used. Let's trying to think of a school down here. Oh, they called it Red Pepper.
Red Pepper?
Red Pepper. The story was that they were having a party in the wintertime. They had the stove fired up and got warm, and they were having a good time dancing. Now, there was some roughens poured red pepper on the stove, and it run everybody out. So that was the end of the party. Getting back to my Lower Cove experiences, I'd done some trapping in the winter, catch some muskrats and mink and things like that, but I always wanted to catch a raccoon and have a Daniel Boone raccoon cap with the tail hanging down the back. So it had been some fresh snow, and over in the field there was a ditch that ran through and a culvert, and I'd noticed the tracks had been going in and out of that culvert. So I took a trap with me that morning, and coming home in the evening, I set that trap at the end of that culvert. So the next morning I was anxious to see if I'd caught me a coon. So I rode around where I could see the end of that culvert, and sure enough, I could see it looked like a front foot in the trap. I could just see his foot in the little front. So I tied my horse up to the rail fence there, and I got down there and I pulled the trap stake out and I got a hold of the chain, and I thought, no, I'm just going to pull a jerky him out and hit him over the head. And so he came out a little easier, and I thought, and I hit him in the middle of the back. Well, it was a skunk, and I got stunk up really bad. In fact, I had trouble getting on my saddle horse, and of course I was late for school. So there was three in my class, a boy sitting in the front seat, and the girl, neighbor girl, sitting behind me. And those seats, they weren't attached, the three together. They were individuals, and your seat had the desk fastened on the front. Well, when I sat down, the boy in front, he slid out and took across the room, and I heard a little commotion back to me. I looked around, and that girl was about to rear over backwards in her seat. And the next thing, the teacher sent me home.
How long did it take to get that smell off of you?
Well, that's a little process, all right. Yeah. So that's about the story about the school history in this neighborhood.
So when those schools closed, you had not graduated at that point, right? Or had you?
No, I hadn't graduated. Well, yeah, I graduated from grade school.
Okay. And then where were you in high
school? So then, my high school, the first 3 years, I went to LeGrand. We boarded, my brother and I boarded in LeGrand because we weren't in a high school district. So we didn't have to pay tuition. Well, then the last year after they consolidated, then we rode the bus to school because we would have had to pay tuition to go to the grand school. Mm-hmm. So I graduated at the Cove.
Tell me more about your boarding experience. Where did you stay?
Well, my my cousins, their folks bought a house in town for them to, and their oldest daughter, she did most of the cooking, looked after us. And so we boarded with them. It was a kind of a partnership thing, mm-hmm. to board in school. And of course, we'd come home on the weekends.
When you came home on the weekends, was it back to work as usual, or was it different?
Yeah, it was chores.
You had been gone.
It was chores. Kind of the regular thing on the farm.
Did you find that was difficult to be away from your family during the week? Or did you welcome the break?
Oh, I don't remember. I never did like school too much. And I just learned to adjust to it.
Mm-hmm. While you were boarding, were you involved in any other activities in town?
No. I never was too great for sports. I liked baseball. When I was in grade school, we played baseball, but I never, a big school like Le Grand, I really didn't get into it.
Was it difficult to make friends in a bigger place like that, where you had come from these one-room schoolhouses?
Yeah, it was a little different because the town, big town school, where they was cliques, mm-hmm. town kids, and of course that's country. We were country hicks, mm-hmm. so we were kind of a different breed.
Did they refer to you in that way?
Well, I don't remember. But
you could definitely feel that separation.
There was a lot more activity with sports and all that I didn't participate in. Mm-hmm.
At what point in your life did you realize that you would be staying on the farm?
Well, that's all I ever knew. You know, and my folks didn't really encourage me to go to college. My sister, they sent her to college, but I wasn't interested. In fact, they made me go to high school. Mm-hmm. I wasn't interested in school. I liked the farm. Living out here on a dead end, you know, no close neighbors. I never butted much with anybody, and so I guess I was kind of a loner.
Mm-hmm. But you did, in fact, go on to a trade school.
Well, I went one winter and learned to weld. Went to welding school in Portland. That's the only other formal training that I had.
Was that the first time that you had traveled to that area to see the real thing?
Well, it's the first time I've been away from home all winter. Mm-hmm. Well, that was 1941, and that's when the war started. And I went through welding school, and then I worked the rest of the winter in the shipyard welding on those ships. You know, they were building for the war. Well, then when it came time to farm, I came home. And then, of course, the draft started. And I was called up about every 6 months to go to Portland for a physical. And I'd come back and they're ready to go. And the draft board, then they deferred me for farm mm-hmm. deferment. Mm-hmm. And so I never did. My brother went. He wasn't involved as much in the farm, mm-hmm. and so I never was.
Was that frightening for you at that time, to be kind of on call and waiting for the draft board?
Well, it was kind of frustrating, but you just kind of made up your mind to take what comes. Mm-hmm. And,
so once you had finished school and finished your welding program and then came home on the farm, were you living in the same home as your parents at that time?
Yes, I was living with my parents.
How long did you do that?
Well, it was until 1946 is when I married. So from high school, it was six, seven years there that I worked on a farm. Mm-hmm. You know.
Tell me how you met your wife.
One of her cousins out of Elgin, she was kind of an old maid. She taught school. She was in her 30s, I think, when she met this fellow, and they invited me to their wedding, and that's where I met my wife, was there at the wedding. And then they would line up something, a date or something for us. And I wasn't very interested yet in girls, but finally come around. And
Was she from this area?
Elgin, out of Elgin. Mm-hmm. She was a ranch girl. She rode 3 miles to country school, too. Mm-hmm. She and her brother.
But you had never met previously?
No. Mm-hmm. No. And
did you marry right away?
No, we dated for 2 or 3 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was busy here on the ranch, and in fact, I didn't have a car then. I guess I bought one car before we were married, and then I got rid of it, and then before we were married, I bought a new car, the first automobile I had.
You recall what kind of car you bought?
Yeah, it was a Nash,
mm-hmm.
Nash Ambassador. I don't know when they quit making those. Several years later, they quit making those. And I don't know whether they merged into another. I don't remember just what happened there.
Did owning a car change your lifestyle on the ranch? Did you get out more? Did you move around the valley more than you had with your horse, for instance?
Not really. I dated a girl I was going to school with here at Cove some. I went through the motorcycle mode, and I graduated from that.
So it didn't take you too far away then, getting a car?
No, I never was much for traveling and going places.
Mm-hmm. So when were you married, in 1946?
Yes.
Okay. And then where did you settle with your wife?
Well, I first worked for a ranch out of Imbler for 4 years. And then my dad and my uncle, they farmed together a partnership, and I never got along too well with my partnership, so that they decided to divide up the land. So I farmed in with my dad.
Mm-hmm. By this time you had mentioned that things were changing on the farm, and you were no longer farming with horses, but with machinery.
Right.
Can you tell me more about that transition?
Well, it didn't happen all at once. After we got a tractor, we still used horses for some of the work. And then when we bought a combine, that did away with the stationary thresher. So we didn't use all those wagons and horses then.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take only 2 or 3 people to run a thrashing mm-hmm. group as a combine.
And at that point, what happened to the team of horses?
Well, the horses were sold. They were sold off.
Mm-hmm.
But we still kept the saddle horses, for the cattle operation.
Mm-hmm. When you started in the partnership, then were you still living on this place? Or were you living on that other ranch?
No, I left the other ranch as soon as we found it, because I was in partnership with my father, and then we built this house. I was 2 or 3 years building this
mm-hmm.
this house. And we rented a house in LSL for, I guess, 3 years anyway, while we were building this home.
So how long have you lived in your home now?
Since 1953.
Wow.
Yeah.
At the point when you built this home and settled here, then you were back working on this in this ground. Were you working alone, or were you working with your father still?
No, I was working with my father here while I was building.
Mm-hmm.
I got the logs off the mountain up here, and my granddad had the sawmill here, and we sawed the logs, the lumber, and it was all homemade except the finish plywood and finished work like that that we bought. But the this outside logs and the framing lumber we sawed here. Mm-hmm. So, and then all the gravel, old gravel, and then the neighbors helped pour the concrete for the foundations. Mm-hmm. We just kind of one step at a time to build.
How did you come up with the design or the plan for your home?
Well, we just talked about it and drew sketches and we probably changed some things when we were building. Mm-hmm. And as the family increased, we built another bedroom upstairs and finally ended up with three bedrooms and a bath upstairs. Mm-hmm. And, that would be nice to shrink it.
Go back the other way?
Yeah.
How many children did you have?
We have four daughters and a son. Yeah, we had kids at home for 36 years. They were 4 years apart.
Oh, wow. Each one was 4 years
apart? Yeah. And when our first daughter was born in 48, and our son, our last, was born in 65.
Wow.
Our daughter started going to school, college, out of high school. We sent them to Little Grand AOC. They stayed at the dorm. We weaned them away just a little at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second year, we sent them down to BYU. And I bought a Volkswagen van. And they'd load their stuff in, and away they'd go. Well, 4 years come along, they were graduating, the next one would take it. So we got pretty good use out of that old van.
So the van went through every child?
Oh, but our son. Well, let's see, it seemed like one of them. We got a car for another one. But that was the way it started.
I noticed there's still a Volkswagen van on the property. Is that the same one?
No. No, that's a different one.
Was it intentional that you spaced your children 4 years apart, or was that just the way it happened?
Well, kind of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was it like raising children in the same place where you had grown up?
Well, actually, I didn't have that much to do with it. My wife raised the kids. The home was just kind of a filling station for me because I was in the field and out running the ranch.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about what running the ranch meant during those years.
Well, it's kind of like cooking, washing dishes, and making beds. It's just kind of the same thing over year after year. You plow, you cultivate, you seed, and you harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And next year is the same. However, later years it's become more intensified. It's more of a business. We have more regulations all the time. There's more weeds. There's more diseases that we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up, the only weeds we ever worried about was scaleweed and the alfalfa, because if you put up the hay, it had scaleweed in it, fed to the milk cows, it'd taint the milk.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd pull with the cheatgrass, we'd pull the cheatgrass and we'd pull the scaleweed. But now there's a dozen other kinds of weeds that are...
Mm-hmm.
And
as things changed and you had these newer diseases and newer weeds coming along, where did you get your information of how to deal with that?
Well, we lucked out with our son-in-law. He was in the Navy. In fact, he was a Philadelphia boy. He grew up in Philadelphia, but he was in the Navy 6 years. And he was stationed on an atomic cruiser. Well, he was on the Forrestal when they about sunk that over in Vietnam. And then after that, he was on an atomic cruiser, and they were testing it out of San Francisco Harbor. And our oldest daughter was teaching school at Fairfield, and he didn't live on the barracks. He and a buddy of his rented an apartment, and it happened to be next to where our daughter's apartment was, and that's how they got acquainted. So when he got out of the Navy, he wanted to be a veterinary. He took his pre-med down at Davis in California. Well, when it come time to enroll for vet school, they were all filled up. He couldn't get in. So he didn't want to sit around and wait. So they moved up here, and he thought maybe he'd get in Pullman. They have a vet school there. Well, the same thing, they were enrolled. So he got his teaching certificate up at the college, and he taught there, but he didn't like. He'd come out on the farm, and he liked what was going on, and so that's when we decided to work him in. So he had this med training, and he savaged these chemicals and all this paperwork. So he takes care of all of that, and I'm allergic to paper, so I just try to look busy and stay out of the way.
So you don't like all that paperwork and...
we're doing some spraying this morning, and he has to take a course every 2 years to be able to buy some of these chemicals.
That's a big difference then from the way it was when you were growing up.
When I was growing up, there wasn't any of those weed sprays. The only thing I remember the first Canadian thistle we ever saw here, and my dad, he was really on to that. He had a little hand sprayer, and he fixed a pouch where he could carry it on his saddle, hook it on his saddle horn, and he'd go around looking for those. And I remember there was one patch down the river bend here, and just a little patch, the first that we'd seen. And we were still doing the stationary thrashing machine. He says, "I'll fix that." So he set up there and it made the straw stack, threw the straw stack on top of that Canadian thistle patch. Well, it smothered it out. But then later years it kept blowing, blowing in from other places. And it's all over the country now. But all it had, the chemical in, was what they call atlasite, and it was a saline solution of some kind. It wasn't very potent. But we'd never heard of all these other herbicides that we have nowadays. Pesticides and all that.
Did you continue to maintain a crew after you took over and things went more?
Well, we didn't have to hire very much help. Just seasonal help. We never go in after my father died. We got rid of the cattle. We didn't have any little livestock, so we didn't have to hire anybody to help in the winter.
Were you happy to see the cattle go?
To which?
Were you happy to see the cattle go?
Well, I wasn't all that enthused. You know, we ran them. In April, we'd take them over to our early range sagebrush country back of Craig Mountain, back of Union. It took 2 days to drive over there, and we'd corral them up at the Woodruff Ranch overnight. And then in June, we'd take them, trail them to the Minum. We had forest permits. My family and a couple other families had built a cabin and a nice barn, log barn. And we hired a rider to stay at the cabin all summer and take out salt and check on the cattle. And then in October, we'd go in, stay at the cabin and round up. Well, then along about 64, the Forest Service decided they were going to make some changes. There was more sportsmen and hunting pressure, and so they felt that that country was worth more for hunting sportsmen than it was for ranging, grazing. So they canceled us off and made us burn our cabin and barn, And so we bought some pasture land out in the valley here between Cove and Union here, and we ran a few years until my father died, and then we got rid of the cattle, so we don't keep any.
When did your father pass away?
In 1980. Yeah, he was 1980.
Was he ill?
No. He'd lived another 10 years if he'd stayed off the young horses. He got bucked off in a brain concussion and putting out. My uncle lived to be 90. My dad was 80 when he died.
A couple of things I wanted to mention that you had mentioned to me before. You had quite the career as a pilot. Can you tell me when you first flew and what led to that?
Well, I was always interested in flying, but I never had time and couldn't do it. I had a friend that had a little airplane, and he'd fly and land in the alfalfa field and want me to fly with him, and I didn't feel comfortable if it was hot weather and if it was turbulent, and so I didn't. And I couldn't afford to take the time anyway to do it. And then finally, later on in the, I guess it was the late 50s, in the 50s somewhere, I guess. I had two cousins that had airplanes. One of my cousins flies for FedEx now. That's all he's ever done. He flew in the military, and he flies for FedEx now. And my other cousin was a rancher out of Condon. He had a private airplane. He and his wife both flew. So anyway, finally I decided I wanted to get into it, and so I bought a little Piper, and that was the one that flew our children over the foothill to meet the school bus, and we had the flood. And then from then on, well, we bought a Cessna 4-passenger, and I built a landing strip here. If I'd have had to go to the airport, I would have never owned an airplane. I would have never got into it. But we enjoyed. much blood.
Mules. What can you tell me about mules, and what is your connection with them?
We didn't have mules until later years. My dad farmed with horses. And I don't remember they ever had work mules. But how I started with mules, a packer that... Well, he and his wife, they built Minum Lodge on the Minum River. And when he retired, the way he sold his mules, and I bought two of his best mules to start packing. We were hunting. We would hunt in the fall. My dad and one of the other stockmen. And I bought a couple of mules from him just to pack. I hadn't thought about riding. Well, then later, I raised some and had a fellow... So on the Snake River break for me, and I've got a couple of good riding mules now. Mules has come on here later years. Used to be mules, they just they wanted big mules to pack. In the early days in the mines, they packed the equipment with mules, you know. But I just use them for pack. But now I have some that I ride. When they started raising mules from Tennessee walking mares, Arabian and thoroughbred mares with a Spanish jack, they were nice bodied mules, and with a Spanish jack their head and ears were more in proportion. The bigger mules with the mammoth jacks, they were bigger. And if you bred a Tennessee Walker or a thoroughbred with a big jack, their head and ears were out of proportion to their body. So a Spanish jack, they were nicer mules. And so those are the kind of mules that I've had.
What's the difference between the ride of a horse and a mule? Is there any difference?
A mule is more sure foot and smoother, especially the pack. And they learn you can lead them through trees, and they'll learn to not bump the pack on the tree much faster than a horse will.
Mm-hmm.
But their feet are tougher. I don't ever have to shoe my mules on the trails, these mining trails. But a mule, they can move fast if they want to. But for roping and working stock, a horse is better, really.
Mm-hmm. Because they're quicker in that way?
Yeah, they can jump out, and like for roping like that, they'll probably move faster.
Did you ever use the mule commercially?
No.
Just for your own
benefit? Yeah.
How many of those did you have at one time?
Well, I had half a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm down to two now. And we had the last saddle horses I had was Arabian. My daughter has the last Arabian saddle horses.
And you're still riding today?
Still.
You still ride today?
Yes.
Just for fun?
Yeah.
And do you take them still into the Minim
yes.
to go camping?
Yeah. Yeah.
At what point did you decide to retire from farming, ranching?
We lucked out with our son-in-law, our oldest daughter's husband, when he worked him into it. And he'd had the experience, you know, with medical training, and he was... I guess better organized in some ways than I was, but anyway, he worked into it real good, and it was time for me to slow down, and I was glad we really lucked out that he could take over and run the place. With the way things have changed, you know, so much other things that you have to contend with, so he's doing a better job than I did in some ways.
So you were, how old were you then when you retired?
I was probably about 70.
Mm-hmm. So how have you filled your time? What kinds of things have you done here?
Well, mostly tinker around and then building. I built that entrance out there in 85. That was scraps. Those bridge frames I picked up. I was on the county commission back in the early 70s, and I bought those bridge frames, and then those columns were from Boisakedski chip plant. Those columns laid horizontal, and they tumbled the chips. They had a case around it outside, and they tumbled the chips through, and they had that fan on top there was powered by a motor, and the hot air blew through to dry those chips, and about every 12, 15 years they had to replace them. The seams would get leaky, and so I got them out of the salvage yard. And the bridge frames I picked up from the county, so I built that. Well, then this wooden bridge here was built, that's been probably 70 years ago. About every 15 years we'd have to put a new deck on it. So when I guess it was just before I went on the county commission, they paved the Booth Lane, and they required it to have a wider bridge. So I bought this bridge from the contractor, the steel bridge. And in 1988, I installed that bridge. I had a fellow that had worked for me. He was a contractor. He helped me put that bridge in. I got some tamarack logs from off of the mountain to slide that bridge across. It had a concrete deck on it, and they'd broken the deck off to move it. And so I jacked it up and put logs under each side, and put a cross log under the center and on each end so that it fit down on those side logs to slide it on. And I rented some cable, a couple thousand feet of cable, and some pulleys. And I buried a big concrete anchor on this side of the river, and slid that bridge on these logs halfway across. Then I had to put staging out in the center of the river to support it, to drag it on across. and I had to put a new deck on it. There's 12 sections of concrete deck, and there's 5 ton of rebar, and we poured 6 sections on one side and 6 sections on the other side, concrete. And then I had to hire a big crane to come in to lift them onto the bridge. So there's 120 tons of concrete deck and 60 tons of steel bridge. So that was the project in 88. And then about 7 or 8 years ago, I built this hangar building out here. So that's been my last project since I retired.
You're certainly keeping busy in retirement.
I've been fortunate to be able to do some things while I'm waiting to die.
And you're healthy and strong, and so still able to do a lot of those things.
I don't know whether I told you before. Somebody asked me about how I was doing, and I told them I have a, what do they call it, people that work on your feet?
Podiatrist
works on my feet. I had a what is a bone specialist?
Think of it.
Well, anyway, I had a new bearing put in my knee, and I've got shingles, and I have bifocals, hearing aids, and 2 fillings.
That's pretty good. It's a pretty good track record, I would say.
And I'm still breathing.
Now, you also mentioned to me, though, that when you were a boy, you had your tonsils out. Can you tell me more about that? We'll kind of go backwards for a minute.
I had earache a lot when I was young, and so we had seen the doctor, and he said that I had bad tonsil. So we had my tonsils taken out over at Hot Lake, that old hospital there at Hot Lake. That's been 70 years ago. I was 15. And the doctor, he set me up in a chair, and he reached in there and nipped out those tonsils.
I
thought I'd choke to death. I would never recommend that. I'd want to be put out if I was going to have that process. So that's about all the experience of doctoring through the years.
Was that the only time you had been in Hot Lake?
Yes.
Do you recall the surroundings and what it looked like?
The building was in pretty good shape then. In fact, I don't know how long the doctor practiced there, for several years probably. And then later, when they weren't doctoring and having the hot baths, they had a restaurant going there for some years, and then finally it was all shut down. And then later, here about 30 years ago, there was Dr. Griffith and another fellow thought that building was going to restore it. The roof was bad then, and I was on the bank board, and they come to the bank to borrow a dollar money to restore that. And when the loan committee met around the table, and come my turn, I told them that all I saw there was a lot of used brick, and they didn't even smell good. The roof was bad then. Mm-hmm. And so now these folks have, they've really got their work cut out for them if they can restore that thing and make a paying proposition. Mm-hmm. I'm a little skeptical about that.
I remember the name of the bone doctor, orthopedic surgeon. Is that what you're thinking? Okay.
Yeah. Dr. Sandifer over at Baker.
And then I wanted to go back just a little bit too when we were talking about the entryway that you built. I noticed there are a man and a woman on a mule. Does that represent you and your wife?
Yes. When I was on the county commission, our roadmaster that I worked with, Alvin Camel, he's quite an artist. He's painted some real nice pictures. But anyway, he drew those out on a piece of paper. And I sent it up to Moses Lake to a shop, and they cut those out. It's 3/8 steel plate, and I mounted them on top there.
I'm not sure that we mentioned your wife's name. What was her name?
Norma Jean.
What is her name, I should say?
Yeah, Norma Jean. Her maiden name was Roulette.
Roulette?
French. Yeah, her family, both on both sides, were pioneer people in early days. All ranch people.
So as we have sat together the last couple of times and we've been taping and you've been able to reflect back, are there other things that you feel like you want to share about your life here in Union County?
Not much that would be legal. I have some favorite jokes.
But they're not legal?
Well,
not
I've got... I'll give you one and you could tell it in church.
Okay.
This was back in the horse and buggy days. And this doctor had a nice buggy and a driving mare that he'd go out and make calls home. Well, his teenage son got taking the mare and buggy on Sunday afternoon, taking his girl for a ride. Well, he got to racing with the other boys, and he'd bring the mare in. Oh, he lathered up and hot. So his dad, he put a stop to that. He said, "Son, I've bought you a horse, and you can abuse him, or you can do any run him and do whatever you want, but you take care of him, and you can name him." So he named his horse Closer. So he'd put the harness on Sunday afternoon, hook up the buggy and drive across town to pick up his girlfriend. So he'd help her up into the buggy, and then he'd get up ready to go and get the lines. He'd say, "Get up Closer."
Did it work? I'm sure there are plenty of other things that happened over the years that...
I forgot a lot of it, and then of course I've kind of run out of room.
Are you pleased with your time in Union County? Would you do it any differently?
No, I really... I'm really happy that my parents and my wife's parents, the sacrifices they made to come here and live in this valley. This valley's been good to us through the years.
How would you sell Union County to someone who was looking?
I like this valley the way it was 50 years ago better than now. Mm-hmm. These outsiders from California and other places, you know, they've outvoted us on anything. They voted cougar, you know, and now they want wolves, and there's more regulations all the time. Mm-hmm. As the population grows, you know, we've seen the best of it. It's you know, the world isn't a very friendly place, and it seems like the world gets smaller all the time, and the population grows. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's a lot of new things like medicine, like that can keep people a lot more comfortable than they used to be. Mm-hmm. And that's a blessing that we have.
Is the trade-off worth it in your eyes?
siblings about that. I wouldn't want to go back to the early times, but back then everybody had been the same, they were the same, you know. Mm-hmm. Now it seems like there's more extremes both ways. The richer get richer and the poor are. I think this fuel thing's just strangling this country. I don't know what's going to happen. It comes cold weather and a lot of people, this fuel thing, it's going to be a hardship on a lot of people. Mm-hmm. One of the truckers that trucked that lumber in for this dorm up here at college, he was telling me, he said, I'm not making any money. He says, I have my rig paid for. It's just something to do.
Well, Russell, I've certainly enjoyed talking to you. You're a very interesting man, and I appreciate you sharing your stories and sharing your experiences for us on tape.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of other people can give you some good perspectives about their lives.
Well, I certainly appreciate your perspective.
Okay.